From 7CTOs, my name is Etienne De Bruin, and you're listening to the CTO Podcast. Every week, I spend time with fascinating people that enrich the lives of chief technology officers around the world. From perfecting the basics of building technology organizations to inspiring our minds into shaping our future. As always, the CTO Podcast is brought to you by 7CTOs, helping CTOs become world-class leaders. Let's go. My guest today is Alex Balazs, CTO at Intuit. Fascinating talk about vulnerability in the C-suite. We talk about generative AI and how to manage your time when everybody wants to talk to you. So let's do this. Alex?
Yes, Etienne.
Someone I consider a close friend, but to the world, the CTO of Intuit. Our friendship also started when you were, was it chief architect or before that?
I think it was chief architect of TurboTax is when we actually first met.
And then it went to?
Then chief architect of Intuit, head of platform engineering, and now I've been the chief technology officer of Intuit for the past 7 months.
Man. And I think during those 7 months, I've been trying to see you and hang with you, and it's just been impossible.
It's been big to move into this role. It definitely is a big role. I've really enjoyed it. It's basically everything I could have imagined in terms of a pinnacle of my career is to take all the experience I've ever had as a frontline engineer, as a leader, as an architect, as everything, as a business leader, and put them all together and to be CTO of a company that is on the cutting edge of leveraging AI to really revolutionize the kinds of experiences that we can provide people and to do it to power their prosperity and do it for a good reason. I'm the luckiest person in the world. I've got the best job in the world.
And that's what I feel from you. Even when you were chief architect of this mere little product called TurboTax, you emanate those vibes just being filled with gratitude, and I really find that to be a huge quality that I'm guessing people who work with you every day feel that as well.
Well, thank you for that. And you definitely have to love what you do. Otherwise, I don't think you can truly make your dent in the universe. As Steve Jobs said, you have to really, really love what you do. And I do. And there are moments where it's a remarkably hard job and I wouldn't have it any other way. And listen, the path that I took also led me to having a friendship with you. So that's like an added bonus.
Thank you. Speaking of friends, I think it was this week on Monday where I woke up a little disconnected and disoriented from my mission and my vision. And we're on a little text group and man, you just jumped in right there and you were like, dude, we're shaping the future, man. Let's do this, which was really a beautiful jolt that you gave me. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so glad you reached out. You know, one of the most important and little talked about characteristics of successful leaders is vulnerability. And we don't talk about it enough because we're not vulnerable. But vulnerability is so important in some moments where, you know, you reach out and you just said, hey, everyone, I'm down. Give me some help. Give me some fuel. Boy, that showed beautiful, wonderful leadership on your part to be vulnerable. And then we step up and we help each other. And I've definitely learned in terms of my leadership style, how I lead teams, how I inspire. It can't all be rah, rah, rah. There are moments where you have to express vulnerability and say, I don't know the answer. Or I'm confused too. Or I'm sad about this too. And we'll figure this out together, right? You have to show the humanity of it. The humanity of it is so, so critically important.
Yeah. The self-talk I felt afterwards where, oh man, this group is going to see me complaining. And, you know, it's just very interesting in the moment when I shared my own vulnerability. And this is not a random group. This is a hand-picked group that I'm in. And I'm just surprised at how in the moment when I was sharing, I felt that sort of that vulnerability. But then afterwards, I was like, oh man, I shouldn't have said that. And what are they going to think about me? And, you know, it's just amazing how the self-talk it's hard to deal with the post. One of my friends calls it the vulnerability hangover. That hangover you feel after you've shared something very deep.
For sure. For sure. And especially based on, you know, in this group, you know, all of us who are part of this amazing community that you've put together, our formative years in life were spent having all the answers. We were always the one that had all the answers. And vulnerability means I don't have the answer. And in fact, so much of the development of a great leader and a great technology leader, especially, comes from undoing some of that programming, right? Like one of the big things that I've learned over the years is that, you know, inquiry versus advocacy. Advocacy is easy for us. We grow up as technologists, as engineers, as whatever we are, right? And so I grew up in the software world. And what do? I advocated to the computer. I'm like, do this, do this, do this, do this. That's literally what programming is, right? So you take that person, you pull them out, and you're like, okay, be a leader. What's the first thing we're going to do? They're going to say, do this, do this, do this, do this, right? And yet the power of inquiry. Inquiry says, I don't know the answer. Just asking a question and saying, I don't know the answer, boy, that's vulnerability. That's why I'm saying there's so much power in vulnerability, because you draw people in. And I actually had a really cool moment. I was up in the Mountain View offices of Intuit last week, and there was a team there that was having an offsite, and a leadership team that was having an offsite on site and our all-day meeting. And one of them came out and said, oh, Alex, you're here. We were just talking about something for an hour that a couple of us learned from you. I'm like, what? What was this? And he said, that thing where you said leaders can only do one of two things. You either take up space or you create space. And I said, yeah, that is something that I teach, because when you're the leader of an organization, I feel you have to explicitly make the decision. I'm communicating right now. What am I doing? Am I creating space so that others can come in? Or am I taking up space by advocating something and making decisions or declaring a vision or whatever it may be? And you have to do both of those things. You have to do them at the right moments, and you have to do them in the right balance. And so it's cool. But sorry, this was a long way to just say that I agree with you, but the whole thing around vulnerability, right? Because part of vulnerability is you create space. And then what did you do? By talking about how you felt in that moment, you created unbelievable space for others. That's why I'm saying that you were courageous, because it would be easy for you as the leader of this group to go in and advocate. Your group, right? You set it up, but you didn't. You created space, and that's a wonderful leadership lesson.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Just to sort of wrap up that topic, when you are in such a high profile role as the CTO of Intuit, who do you go to express vulnerability? How do you keep that going? Do you have your own little group, or how does that manifest? Because I'm sure there's a lot of pressure. You know, you are the CTO of Intuit. Like, you have all the answers. You know what's going to happen, you know? And so where do you go?
Well, you know, it's a great question, because leadership jobs are lonely. We're really lonely, right? Especially when you get to the top position. And as much as you want to be friends and friendly, as much as I want to be friends and friendly with my team, with my organization, ultimately to them, I'm the CTO. And so expressing vulnerability, finding the camaraderie, the things that we crave as human beings, it can be difficult. So, you know, what I do though is, so two things. One is definitely community. So community like the one that you set up. One of the really, really cool things, when I posted on LinkedIn my update that I became CTO, suddenly all these CTOs reached out to me. And they're like, hey, Alex, if you ever want to talk, let me know, man, because it's like, it's a low job. And like, reach out and let's talk. And one of the ones that's been the best is Sri, the former CTO of PayPal. And he and I have chatted a couple of times, and what a wonderful, wonderful person he is. We just chatted a couple of weeks ago. And there's like this feeling that you've got when you're in these roles. And not only do you want to do your job well, you just want to be able to share it with other people that you know is going through that. That community, meeting a bunch of other CTOs, knowing that you have somebody to talk to, bounce ideas off of. It's been very, very powerful. So I think that's part one. But then part two is that, once again, I'll go back to saying, as a great leader, you have to be able to show vulnerability, and you show different levels of vulnerability depending on what level of the organization you're talking to. But, well, you know, I sit down with my leadership team. I'll show moments of vulnerability, maybe a little bit more one-on-one than a group setting, but you have to, because it humanizes you. It opens it up for conversations. And once again, it's one of the greatest tools to create space to hear what's on their mind. I get energy out of that too. I get that fulfillment out of that too, because I have the ability to express some of that vulnerability. But, you know, so I think it's a combination of the community and then plus having an awesome leadership team.
Yeah, I love that. And also, Sri's also a huge friend of the 7 CTOs network. And I think that's something that I see in people like him and like you, just that grassroots appreciation for where you've come from, the willingness to chat, be open. You know, I know we're friends, but still, you know, texting each other, like there's a, even Sri texts me, and it's really kind of amazing to sit back and think, okay, you know, these guys are kind of running the world a little bit, you know, it's pretty amazing. And then you have, and I have a lot of experience with this, CTOs of much smaller companies, and couldn't give you the time of day, man. I find that to be a fascinating juxtaposition, where you imagine the busiest, most powerful CTOs on the planet, send them an email, you get the email back. You send them a text, the text comes back. There's a fluidity in that communication that is shocking. And then you go to the flip side of a CTO who can't respond to the email, can't get you this, can't do that. And I don't think it's a pressure. I think the pressure on the startup is, I mean, the pressure is sometimes a relative experience, but I just find it very interesting that there is an inverse relationship, I think, between people who are small companies, too busy, massive companies, no problem.
An interesting concept. Just thinking about it now as you're unpacking that experience, and I was asking myself, what does that make sense, or does that now make sense? And so my initial reflection is it actually maybe makes a lot of sense, because if you're a large company CTO, you have to learn scale. You can't survive without learning scale. You have to know how to scale yourself. Where do you spend time? Where do you not spend time? And, you know, I think back to when I had smaller teams, I didn't need to have scale. I could be everywhere and I still had time. I can't be everywhere in my organization. In fact, scale extends to work-life balance. Work-life balance is just scale. It's learning how to scale yourself. It's learning where to be, when to be there, how much time do you spend there. And so you reaching out to me or to Sri or to someone in these types of roles, our ability to respond is because honestly, we've gotten good at scale, we've gotten good at scaling ourselves. And we know that, like, I know I could spend the 10 minutes that I spend responding to your message, or the 5 minutes reading a document or meeting with somebody, you know, in the organization. And the truth is that it would be 1% of what it would take to be complete in that. And I've already worked on prioritization. I'm already on scale. I've already worked on putting mechanisms in place to make sure I know what's going well without necessarily being there. To be people, process, technology. And so you have to learn scale. And so we know how to scale, otherwise we wouldn't survive in these jobs.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that as a differentiator is very interesting to consider. I have a lot of avenues I can go down there, but let me get to our pre-recording conversation. You mentioned that you are hanging out with the CTO of the Clippers. Is that?
Yeah, George Hanna, an amazing person. He used to be the CTO of Disney World, a lot of the tech around Disney with the bracelet that you wear, and like that was all him and his team. So amazing experience there. And he's been the CTO of the Clippers now for a couple of years. And we spent the past couple of years collaborating on Intuit Dome. So the new sports arena for the Clippers, it'll be opening this fall, a ribbon cutting ceremony on August 15th. Followed up by a Bruno Mars concert, and then the first Clippers game about a month and a half later in the arena in Inglewood in LA. Outside of the fact that it's cool that Intuit's going to have a building called the Intuit Dome, it's been phenomenal getting to know George, a wonderful person, and I enjoy calling him a friend.
Yeah, so I love that. And one of the things that I want from a futuristic, super modern arena is I want replays on the court.
Like on the court itself?
Hologram replays where the play, you can see the play again, but you can see it played by the holograms. Oh, how close are we to that, Alex?
I think closer than we actually want it to be.
Probably.
You know, I spent quite a bit of time over the past weeks and months really spending time with technology companies, big and small, seeing some of the innovations that they have, especially generative AI and the degree to which generative AI can now generate live video feeds and things like that is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, I had the R&D part of my team created a video generation where one of the people in the group, she talked for about 10, 15 seconds. And then they created a 1 minute video where she was giving tax advice and she's not a tax expert. And then she was giving tax advice in Spanish. And then they said, hey, Alex, listen to this video. And she was giving tax advice in Hungarian. And I speak Hungarian, so I understood what she was saying. And then they created one that was in Farsi and I could send it to Sasan, our CEO, and say, hey, Sasan, look, this video is speaking in Farsi. It's unbelievable. You know, that type of generation, the pace at which it happens, the speed at which it happens. I was recently at the NVIDIA GTC conference in San Jose and just seeing what NVIDIA's doing from a hardware perspective. And, you know, they're creating hardware designs that really defy the laws of physics. I don't know if you saw some of the videos that Jensen had, but they basically two chips and put them so close to each other that the chip thinks it's a single chip. So basically, the electrons just jump from chip to chip, and it basically defies the laws of physics. The advances are amazing. That being said, I mean, already the Intuit Dome is going to be a technical marvel for sure.
Really? So can you share some of that? It's going to be a technical marvel. Will Bruno Mars actually be in the dome for that concert?
As far as you know, yes. I can't go into detail.
Okay.
But I will tell you that the fan experience will be like no other. It will be like absolutely no other. Being there will be an absolute experience.
My friend and I think it was maybe a year or two ago, were talking about the VR headsets. And I was sort of poo-pooing the whole thing. And, you know, and we were talking about the value of it. This was way back in VR years. And he said to me, the number one thing he's getting from it is the ability to sit with his dad and his brother courtside watching basketball games. And I said to him, okay, but seriously. And he said, no, for some reason, when I look to my right, I look to my left, my dad and my brother are sitting next to me. We're sitting in prime seats and we're watching the basketball game in a way that is, he said to me, it was more than possible. It was really good. Of course, some optimizations were happening. So what was happening further down, you couldn't see as well as up close, but thought to myself, that is beautiful. And so now in the generative AI era that we've just rushed into, it's true. I don't feel like a hologram replay is that far away.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast the technology really is evolving. You know, I was at a home automation store and I didn't realize that it had gone complete mainstream to build a TV from 24 inch by 24 inch cubes. And depending on how many you plug together, that's how big the TV is. And the technology is unbelievably expensive, but as we know, it comes out, it's expensive, it commoditizes, it gets cheaper. But literally you can create, have a wall at home and it's 20 feet wide, create a 20 foot wide TV. So if you could do that kind of stuff, and I don't know if you've seen a lot of the recent new NBA arenas, but the floors basically have become TV screens.
Unbelievable. I'm actually going to the Lakers game tomorrow.
Fantastic.
Will you be there?
No, I will not be there. That would be full. Sounds like a great time.
But you are someone who said to me when I invited you to, oh, was it a live concert? You were like, no, I don't really do live concerts.
Yeah, I am not a concert person yet. No.
Maybe if the technology upgrades, maybe you'll be into it.
Maybe. I could tell you that a year plus ago, my son and I were at the Super Bowl in Phoenix And at halftime, when the Rihanna concert came out, I put my earbuds in and turned the noise canceling on. And then I had my Apple Watch basically complaining, too loud, where you are is dangerous.
Wow.
It was like 125 decibels. It's like a jet sitting next to a jet engine or something. But meanwhile, I checked on my phone and the earbuds got it down to like 80. So I could still hear the concert perfectly fine.
I will say, I love going to concerts, but I absolutely wear the earbuds. I don't care who it is. I wear the earbuds.
But yeah, sorry, I'm sorry I declined your very, very nice invitation. I love music, but I do not like loud music.
Are you ready to elevate your team's performance and your own career as CTO? Introducing the 7CTOs Growth Program. With 7CTOs, you'll join a supportive community of tech leaders dedicated to helping you reach new heights. Our group coaching program, led by experienced CTOs, focuses on the proven CTO levels framework. Assess your team, processes, and technology challenges with our easy-to-complete assessments, and then dive deep into monthly coaching calls where you'll get unstuck and gain insights on specific topics. Craft actionable plans tailored to your needs, guided by expert advice and playbooks designed to drive results. Plus, gain access to our exclusive CTO community for ongoing support and collaboration. Sign up now and start your group coaching adventure for only $300 per month or $3,000 per year. Your membership includes priority access to all 7CTO's events and activities. Don't miss out on the opportunity to join a global community of experienced CTOs, attend virtual events, and participate in confidential group coaching sessions. Visit 7ctos.com/growth and level up your leadership skills today. Obviously, as CTO, staying clued up on what's going on, not only understanding what's happening in AI land, but the ability to say, oh, this is enough of a disruption that we have to embrace this, or this is a disruption, but it's a distraction. I'm imagining that there's a lot of pressure on the role of CTO at a company like Intuit to kind of make those bets, understand the direction, work closely with your team to know what can and can't be done. So are you, I guess a question I would ask you that many CTOs feel is not only how to stay abreast of what's going on in what's going to come down the pike a year or two from now, which feels like it's become impossible to sense what is going to be the norm a year from now, but also to decide what to commit resources to and some context and time cycles to. How do you do that?
As with many technology disruptions, there's an early wow factor, but then you realize there's not much substance behind the wow. But then people find killer use cases and they realize the wow was worth it. And as I talk with technology leaders across many companies, many of more technology partners, those that we consume services from, big companies, small companies, you know, there is a grand search out there for killer use cases for generative AI. There's a lot of wow. But the question is, how does that make the lives of people better? Because otherwise, it's not a killer use case. Imagine Apple trying to release the iPod if the killer use case of listen to 10,000 songs in your pocket didn't exist. You know, if it was just basically everything else, it would not have taken off.
Because just on that topic, there were a lot of players out there that were really trying hard to break into the market, but the whole 10,000 songs thing was not anywhere near the value proposition. But the idea of portable music was crazy, and there was a lot of companies who were trying to break into that.
And I think you touched on a really important point. We've talked about this before, but one of my favorite books of all time, Zero to One by Peter Thiel. In there, he talks about disruption through technology and how do you truly create technology disruption. And he says, when you do that, you can't be 10% better than the alternative. You have to be 10 times better than the alternative. And that's what makes it a killer use case. That's what makes it hard to compete with. And so now the challenge for me and for Intuit, and it's a challenge that we're rising to, is not how do you apply generative AI everywhere? Not how do you take existing workflows and add generative AI to them? It's what are those killer use cases? What are those applications of generative AI that will make people say, oh my gosh, I am never doing it the way it was before. And the good news is with the spaces that we're in accounting and payroll and payments and taxes and personal finance and email marketing and all these kinds of things, great, great opportunity to have killer use cases. And we've already started releasing some of them, right? So I can give you the ones obviously that are public. If we can use generative AI to help you generate a email subject for your MailChimp email that statistically provides 10%+ revenue gain, that's a killer use case. So you're telling me I send the exact same email, but because of your generative AI, I can get a better subject line and I'm going to get a better click-through rates. And because there's better click-through rates, it'll generate more revenue for the business that sent the email. That's a killer use case. That is not novelty of, hey, I just asked ChatGPT to do my science homework, right? That is a real killer use case that provides benefit to the customer.
Falling short of that would be, hey, generate some interesting subject lines for me that will, you know, be catchy or help people open it. But then you lack the measurement part of that or the actual outcome.
Exactly. And that's really the key too, as Intuit has become a platform company, moving from a product company to a platform company. Not surprisingly, as we made that transition 5-10 years ago, the first thing we did is we measured our success based on technology outcomes and, you know, the maturity of the technology, how fast we move as a technology team. And we're still measuring those things. But ultimately, whether or not the technology we did was right is measured by the business impact. And not just the business impact, but the customer impact. Does the customer actually want this? Is it actually making their life better? And one of the things that we learned from Amazon, there's the book, Working Backwards, right? The whole working backwards model at Amazon. And what that really means is you start with the customer and you work backwards from there. And in order to do that, you have to understand what benefit are you solving for? What is the customer benefit? And Intuit, we declared 7-8 years ago that our customer benefits are more money, no work, and complete confidence. So no matter what you do, you know that you're solving for and you have to measure, did this deliver more money for the customer? Did this make them more confident? Or did this eliminate work? Because if we did, they're going to want this. And now we've got the lens of saying, and when you apply AI and generative AI, did you make it 10x better than the alternative? And if you did, and you can measure that in the benefit, boy, that's a killer use case.
Now that's very interesting. Keep going. You said the MailChimp subject line.
So inside of TurboTax this year, it used to be that you would do a review of your taxes. And if you didn't do something correctly in one of the forms, it would say, hey, go back to step 23 of the 100-step interview and go fix it. And now with generative AI, you can basically say, no, I'll figure it out. This data field is missing. I'll put it where it needs to go. Because it's not just about generating it for you. It's about generating it for the data model of the product and making sure you put the data in the right place once you get it from the customer.
Yes. And I think as I'm listening to you on that, there is this issue of trust. So obviously on a technical level, we're dealing with hallucinations, and on a customer impact, it is, if I told TurboTax to fix something in my forms, will it actually do it correctly? And that's not just with Intuit. That's everywhere I go. Whenever I use generative AI, it's not always right, but it's also not always satisfactory. Having a decision point, you know, obviously it's not a decision engine, but it's a little, I can imagine as CTO, it's hard to navigate that.
It is. And so it's a paradigm change for sure. And especially in the world technology software, in software with old school imperative programming, if you write an app that can calculate A plus B and you put in 3, 3 and it will give you 6. You do it 5 more times, it'll give you 6 each time. You do it 10 more times, it'll give you 6 each time. Now suddenly you're going to a probabilistic world. And generative AI is probabilistic. And the probabilities are getting better and better and better. The models are getting better and better and better, but it's probabilistic. That being said, humans are wrong. Humans hallucinate. Humans don't remember things the right way, right? One of the things that I tell my teams, for example, is we need to solve for being as accurate as we can, but think about it from the perspective of like a self-driving car. So with self-driving cars, there's a general public perception that the self-driving car needs to be perfect. When in reality, at scale, it just needs to be better than people. It needs to get in fewer accidents than people. And so now take a domain, some kind of business domain, accounting, taxes, drawing pictures, you know, at Adobe, or working with, you know, with images. What the generative AI does it need to be perfect? Or does it need to be better than a human expert? And how do you explain that to customers? So I think that there's an education part of this. There's definitely a grounding part of it that I don't think, you know, grounding systems, normal services, things like that are, I think they're going to be around for a while, especially in areas where accuracy is really, really, really important. There's definitely an education part of it.
And is that education part of it also, you know, with your own C-suite, your own teams, maybe hopes and aspirations? Clearly, a lot of CTOs are dealing with trying to level set things inside of their C-suites. I get a lot of requests from companies who, you know, want to talk to me about, well, you know, AI this and AI that, and my CTO should be incorporating AI tools and language models. So there's a sort of a white water, or just like the waves of what's coming out from the public perception and what CTOs are facing in trying to level set what is, can and can't be done.
Yeah, I would say that's true. But my mindset of it is that certainly in our lifetimes, there will not be a technology innovation like what's going on right now. And we cannot predict the pace at which this technology will disrupt everything, only to know that it's going to be significant. And the reason I say that is because it's difficult to separate an outlandish request from a non-outlandish one sometimes. And so the best thing to do is to build an organization that can iterate and test quickly. And that's what we're doing, for example. So as it relates to using generative AI to revolutionize the workforce, put together small teams, try out tools, build tools, iterate quickly, learn. And don't worry about, is it even possible? Just do it. Test. See what the outcomes are. Because the rate at which this technology is far exceeding our expectations is just unbelievable. I don't know if you saw that there was a researcher who got early access to Google Gemini. He put this tweet out there. I can't remember his name, unfortunately, where he took the rules from the NBA slam dunk competition, all the video and the video from the NBA slam dunk competition, sent it all to Gemini in one request. And then he asked it the question, which of these dunks was a perfect score? And Gemini accurately predicted which one was the perfect dunk from reading the rules and looking at the live video.
Definitely next level.
Yeah. So, you know, what we need to do as CTOs is to make sure that we are dreaming big.
I like that.
But also putting guardrails in place. You got to put guardrails in place. I tell my teams, for example, dream big, experiment. But experiment doesn't mean experiment with 10 million customers. It means experiment with 10 and tell them you're experimenting.
I remember this from the dinner we had. The impression I got was almost like, if your CEO is thinking these big thoughts, you should be thinking the bigger thoughts and be in the big space.
Absolutely.
And not just be sort of trying to match the CEO's, or the, not the CEO always, but the product people's wild ideas. Be on the other side of that.
You have to. You have to dream really, really big. It's like horizon planning for businesses, right? You have like the H1s that are the $100 million business, the H2, which are the growing revenue producing business, H3, that are the experiments. And we're approaching our experimentation with generative AI in a similar way. We know that there were some core everyday use cases that are going to deliver huge benefit. We also are going to have some things on the really, really experimental side. And you have to dream big, because you know, especially if you're a CTO of a big company, there is some startup out there in a garage somewhere that is not thinking constrained.
Yeah, and it's amazing to hear you say that. to me, looking from the outside, I think, oh, you know what, Intuit, you guys are cool. You got your place in the market. But I mean, as CTO, with all these tools that are available, yeah, you're right. You have to think not only to match the power of what an existing company can provide its customers, but the pace at which they can get there is a fraction of the time it used to take to get to there. So using Intuit as an example for being around for so long, having delivered value for so many years, but also the expense and the teams and the overhead to just deliver on that, the trial and error. Now you have, like you said, a couple kids in the garage, and how to code these things has all been done, basically.
It used to be like back in the day when I first started writing software, Microsoft would issue these CDs, the Microsoft Developer Network CDs, and then you use them to get coding examples to learn how to do stuff. And then suddenly it was online, it was on the internet, and you're like, oh my God, like I can just Google and just say, how do I do X, right? Now, generative AI knows everything about anything that's ever been done. And so it can mimic the things that have already been done. So now the barrier to create something new is tiny because everything that's already been done is available to you. It's almost like if every single patent suddenly disappeared and anything had ever been invented, you could just start building on top of it. That's the intellectual equivalent of what's going on with generative AI, because it's learned everything that's ever, everything that's ever been known, it's learned.
And not only has it learned it, it can almost instantly transfer it to another model. Like, you know, it's
yes,
the rate at which we learn, humans take so long to learn from each other, and these models are like just boom. Any parting thoughts? Anything you want to encourage us with?
Well, you know, I would definitely encourage all of you to, you know, the entire community out there to work in the community and support each other. So, you know, I love the fact that you started with that anecdote of you reaching out and me responding. And thank you for the continued dinner invite you sent me. I said yes that one time, and I promise you I will say yes again soon. But there's so much going on out there. The pace of technology is just so fast. Thank you for what you do at the end in terms of like creating this community. So this community is obviously great. We need to create community outside. So reaching out to people on LinkedIn. I've met so many CTOs just on plane rides. Hey, what do you do? I'm the CTO of Intuit. Oh, I'm the CTO of the, oh, cool. Let's exchange information. So, you know, I encourage everyone out there, network, communicate, support each other, be vulnerable to each other, and then dream big. Dream big. At this moment in time, just if I can steal a little bit from that message that I sent you at the end, I firmly believe in people. And there are some bad people maybe in the world, but I firmly believe in people. I think people are intrinsically good. And we as technologists got into technology, and ultimately we love using technology to solve problems. But right now, with what's going on with this technology, with generative AI and AI and everything else, we are at a moment in history where we have the opportunity to do unbelievable good. And there are people out there who are going to use it to do bad. That's not us. So we have the opportunity and the responsibility to do unbelievable good. And before I hang it up, I'm going to make sure that it's very, very clear to me that I had a role in doing unbelievable good. And for me personally, to power prosperity around the world, that's what we do and do it. That's our mission. But everyone out there can leverage it to do something good. So step up, support each other. Let's go change the world.
Beautiful. Thank you, Alex. That was amazing. Thanks for being with me. And hopefully we'll see you in the community soon.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Okay, brother. Take care.
Bye.
That's the show. Check out ctopod.com. Stay connected. We love hearing from CTOs. We love hearing from CEOs. Anybody who needs to get their CTO plugged in, check out 7ctos.com. There are membership levels for everybody, so it's never too late to expand your network, nurture your relationships, and please, let's see each other soon, like next week. Cheers.